You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
Uhuru, you're listening to Reparations in Action here on the Uhuru News Network. Reparations in Action is the weekly program of the African People Solidarity Committee and the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, organizations of white people who work under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party, bringing the message of African liberation and the demand for reparations into the heart of the white community. My name is Jamie Simpson. I'm your host, member of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, and I'm pleased to have as co-host with me in the studio today, Chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee, Penny Hess. Uhuru, Penny.
Uhuru. Great to be here.
It's an honor to have you here. We are also very honored to have with us in the studio today on Reparations in Action, the founder and chairman of the African People's Socialist Party and the African Socialist International, founder and leader of the Uhuru Movement, Chairman Omali Yeshitela. Uhuru and welcome, Chairman.
Uhuru, thank you so very much, comrade.
It's an honor to have you here. So we have a number of topics that we are pleased to have you here to discuss with us, and Chairwoman Penny Hess also, to discuss the question centered around our upcoming convention, Break the Silence, Refuse to be Complicit, at which you will be the keynote speaker, Chairman. And we're very honored to have you there. And we wanted to have a discussion about the history of the founding of the African People's Socialist Party, circa 1972, and the significance of forces in Gainesville, such as Keturah Kerry, in the early part of the history of the African People's Socialist Party. Could you speak to the significance of the founding of the party in 1972? And the role that forces in and around Gainesville played in the early days of the party?
Well, thank you very much. I'd like to, with your permission first, offer our deepest and most sincere condolences to Comrade Nyabinga Zimbabwe and his wife Tam, their family. They just lost their five-year-old son, Fuzani. He passed away on yesterday. And Binga is probably the single most important person to the development of Uhuru Radio. And he is currently living in North Carolina with his wife and children, and I just felt like it's appropriate for us to acknowledge our sympathies with the loss of that of his child, and also to recognize the role that Binga had played into the development of Uhuru Radio itself. But I think that the founding of the African People's Socialist Party was one of the most important things to happen in the revolutionary movement. The party was founded at a time where the whole national liberation struggle in this country and around the world was under assault. Inside the United States, we had experienced assassinations going back to Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, and great numbers of them in the Black Panther Party, where in 1968 alone, I think something like more than 30 members of the party had been assassinated. Hundreds have been arrested. And for all practical purposes, many people were looking at the death of the Black Liberation Movement. A lot of forces were pushed out of action, pushed out of political life, organizations destroyed, and things like that. And it is interesting that at the very same time, the U.S. government was involved in mopping up the National Liberation Movement inside this country. The African People's Socialist Party was being born. And we were organized in 1972. And the important co-founders of our party were Lawrence Mann, who lived south of St. Petersburg, down in Fort Myers, and was a organizer primarily of African migrant workers, a very powerful migrant stream in Florida. Many people don't know that agriculture at one point, I don't know if it's true today, was the largest component of the economy in the state of Florida. And this huge migrant stream of African people throughout the United States, and a lot of Africans coming from places like the Bahamas and Haiti and Jamaica and what have you, much of Belgrade, Florida, for example, and other areas, Africans who came there from Haiti working sugarcane and a whole bunch of other stuff like that. So Lawrence Mann was an organizer down in Fort Myers area dealing with migrant workers. And then in Gainesville, Florida, headquarters of the University of Florida, which is really the dominant economic and political force in Gainesville and that county, Alachua County. The co-founder was a young woman who was a school teacher. And she had created an organization, the Gainesville Black Study Group. In Fort Myers, Lawrence Mann had organized the Fort Myers Black Rights Fighters, and in Gainesville, the Gainesville Study Group had been organized by this woman, Keturah Carey, who was born in Virginia, but who had come to Florida, and she was teaching in Florida. And we began working together primarily because I became a part of the, that is to say, Carey and I had worked in Florida for a long time and before that, and I had participated in trying to unite the different factions of the National Liberation Tendency in the state of Florida into a single party organization without success. There were all kinds of intervention by the police and things like that. And in 1972, I had become a part of the National African Liberation Day National Coordinating Committee, where we were organizing an African Liberation Day, would be the first African Liberation Day mobilization in this country. And I was working throughout Florida and ran into Keturah Carey during this process primarily. She and I had worked in Gainesville previously, I should tell you that. I had spent a lot of time in Gainesville. I had gone to jail in Gainesville. I had organized, I had been imprisoned in 1966 in St. Petersburg, Florida, for tearing down an 8x4 foot mural that had been hanging in the city hall, on the city hall wall for years and years, that depicted Africans in caricature that might have come from a Klan magazine or something to that effect. And I was sentenced to prison because of that. And while out on bail on prison, I got out of bail from prison on an appeal. And I had been out for 4 days when I had been asked by folks in Gainesville to come up and participate in a demonstration for young political prisoners there. And I caught the bus. I got off the bus in Gainesville and learned when I got off the bus that Martin Luther King had been murdered. And so that changed the character of the demonstration that was supposed to be held. It became more radical, more militant. And 4 days after arrival, 8 days out of prison in Gainesville, Florida, I was arrested, the first person to be arrested under a new law that they had created, inciting to riot, and state law, and didn't have to be a riot. It was a thought crime. All I had to do was want there to be a riot based on what I said. So they arrested me and another African from Jacksonville, and I was locked up in jail for a month. before winning bail this time. And once I got out on bail in Gainesville, Florida, I was out for 6 hours. And if you remember, King had been assassinated during working with the sanitation workers. Yes. And I was out for 6 hours in Gainesville when sanitation workers in St. Petersburg, Florida, went out on strike. Worker used the truck, blocked the gates, kept all the trucks from rolling. And when they went out on strike, then the person who is the Attorney General of the state of Florida got in touch with my bondsman, had the bondsman come off my bail so that I would not be able to come back into Gainesville. And 6 hours after getting out of jail in Gainesville, they arrested me again, locked me up. So the history in Gainesville is, you know, is long. And I was in and out of Gainesville even before that. I did voter education and registration work in Gainesville. Mm-hmm. It is of some irony that I worked for a while for Vernon Jordan, who became one of the powerful guys that helped to create Barack Hussein Obama.
Wow.
And so Keturah Cary was teaching school in Gainesville. And like I said, I had my own history of being in and out of Gainesville up until that time, but working for African Liberation Day, that's what took me back into Gainesville. We meet Keturah Cary, who was an extraordinary young woman, and she became a co-founder of the African People's Socialist Party. And we didn't have like a Congress or anything like that where we declared the party to be in existence. And we can't even say that there was an exact date that we consolidated the party, but we've always used May 25th, which is African Liberation Day, as the of 1972, as the date of the founding of the party. And so Lawrence Mann with the Black Rights Fighters in Fort Myers, Keturah Cary from Gainesville Study Group, and I, as the leader of JOMO, the Hunter Militant Organization, came together and created the African People's Socialist Party.
Yeah.
That was a long and convoluted answer.
It's long, but we do not find it convoluted outside of the obstacles that the oppressor nation has placed in front of the struggle for African people to realize the liberation and self-determination. And I really appreciate that history. I want to, first of all, also just back up and express our profound condolences to Nabinga, to Tam, to their family for this horrific loss, and and just echo that and appreciate that. I also, in terms of the Gainesville work, really appreciate the fact that you led a 38-mile march to a prison outside of Stark, Florida State Prison. Early on in the party's history, and that, after saying that, if you would like to speak to that, and then I want to turn it over to co-host Chairwoman Penny Hess, who will conclude the interview.
It's just a part of the testimony about the incredible and intensive and significant work that we did in Gainesville, Florida. It wasn't just work that was important to us as a party, but it was a time, again, after the African Liberation Movement had been crushed in this country, militarily crushed, and there wasn't that much revolutionary activity happening in the African world, and certainly in the United States. And so what we were doing was in many ways serving to keep the African Liberation Movement alive and advancing, not just being here, but advancing and solving all kinds of problems, taking on all kinds of issues and questions. And in 1972, when we had that mobilization, I've forgotten how many people there were, but it was a long march to Stark. And we were marching around the question of prisons. And in fact, part of what contributed to our doing this was the fact that I had been rearrested and come out of on bond again, around the same mural issue, mural case. And we were marching in opposition to the prison system. We had built a local organization dealing with that question, it was an incredibly significant mobilization that we participated in. Yeah, that was important.
Uhuru, thank you, Chairman, for all the work that you, for creating the African People's Socialist Party and for creating the African People's Solidarity Committee. And we have with us in the studio, Uhuru, Chairwoman Penny Hess of the African People's Solidarity Committee. And before I turn it over, Chairwoman Hess, I just wanted to mention that anyone listening to us right now, if you would like to call in with any questions for Chairman Omali Eshetela, Chairwoman Penny Hess, please give us a call at 727-565-1599, or you can email questions to dj@uhururadio.com. That's uhururadio.com. And again, I'm Jamie Simpson, your host, and I'm turning over now to our co-host, Chairwoman Penny Hess. Uhuru, Penny.
Uhuru, Uhuru, Chairman, and Uhuru, Jamie, and Darren, who's in the room engineering.
Yes. I
do want to unite and just send my condolences also to Nyabinga Tam and his family for the very tragic loss of his child, which is just unthinkable. And you know, just unite with what the chairman had put out and Jamie. And I really appreciate being able to have Chairman Omali Eshetela with us today. And I'm excited about next week, Break the Silence in Gainesville, Refuse to be Complicit, the Uhuru Solidarity Movement National Convention, which for the first time is going to be in Gainesville. And I know that Comrade Jesse, who is the national chair of Uhuru Solidarity Movement, has been up there for the last month, really building and organizing and doing a tremendous job. So I want to salute him as well. And I know we're going to be there and lots of people. It's going to be a very dynamic event. When I want to talk about, I want to ask the chairman about some of the key issues that you have been talking about, Chairman, a lot in the last period. And I know that you've been almost ubiquitous everywhere, just out there in the thick, from Ferguson to, you know, to the party work, to being on the radio, up on Uhuru News, writing, Black is Back Coalition, just everywhere, and really attempting to give the analysis to this period that we're in. And without this, without African internationalism, the political theory that you have developed from the eyes of the African working class, people are lost and floundering. And one of the things that you've talked about a lot is the crisis of imperialism. This is something that you discuss in your book, An Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution Versus Parasitic Capitalism, which I urge everyone to get. And you can get it by going to uhurutours.com. But I, you know, I just wanted to ask you first about the crisis of imperialism. And I think that, you know, how just you describe this and what it means.
Yeah, I think that's a really important discussion. And I think that it's important for a number of reasons, but primarily because we understand this issue of imperialism and its crisis differently from much of what has been characterized as a left or communist or leftist movement, the socialist movement in this country and much of Europe. And I think that's because most European, and in this instance, I mean U.S. and Australia and all those other places, parties and organizations have accepted the basic narrative of social development and how it has occurred subsequent, at least to feudalism, and have accepted something about the existence of the social system as it occurs. And so when they talk about the crisis of imperialism, and we've heard this before, we've heard that people refer to the cycles of crisis, the capitalist cycles of crisis, etc. In most instances, what they're talking about are things like overproduction, that based on the fact that capitalism production is anarchistic, it's not based on the needs of the people, is every capitalist enterprise, you know, out for itself, and therefore in a place where it might be possible to satisfy the needs of a community with trolleys and electrical mass transit systems. We have four or five different car companies competing for the same number of sales and producing as if each of the companies was going to sell a car to each of the people there, which of course doesn't work. And over a period of time, everybody who has a car, everybody who can afford a car has a car, and that means the market is saturated. So you got overproduction. When the market is saturated, that means you got to stop producing, you got to fire people. It means when people are fired, they can't buy cars, they can't buy refrigerators, can't buy houses. And so all of this stuff they talk about, they mean the crisis of imperialism. We mean crisis differently than that, because what most of the left has not understood is that the empire itself rests upon a foundation of colonialism, expropriating value from black people and Mexicans and all these other people around the world. That's what the whole system rests on, that. So what they've been describing as crisis is a defect at some moment of a system resting on colonialism. Mm-hmm. What we're describing as crisis is a place in history where the oppressed peoples of the world that constitute the foundation of the entire social system are challenging that parasitic relationship, and it's doing so in a way that's damn near universal. Mm. So this is the crisis. This is the real crisis. This is the quake that they've been waiting for in California for the last number of years, the big one, et cetera. This is the crisis yes. that we are talking about. That's much different from how the left has mm-hmm. defined that. So we're talking about the very foundation of capitalism, very foundation of empire, being something that is at risk. And this is why, you know, we living in an era of permanent warfare, et cetera, because this is not a contest between France and Germany or between Germany and the United States. In fact, in many ways, what we're seeing more and more is efforts being made by these forces to contain the real crisis, so the French and everybody would get together, kill the Libyans, control Libya, Syria, all these other entities, because again, the foundation is being shaken. Uhuru, I don't know if that's helpful.
Uhuru, yeah. That's yeah. that's very yeah. helpful, and I think that this crisis is affecting the white population in a certain way, and of course, Africans and oppressed people are experiencing it, as you describe, in a very different way, and become, as you say, you know, the subjects of history, mm-hmm. turning, changing the narrative.
Yes.
Could you talk about
yes.
that a little bit?
And that's why I've become the subjects of history, because mm-hmm. now what is happening is the determining factor in history is clear, is that of the struggles of peoples who are changing their relationship with empire. Mm-hmm. Most people also do not understand the death. You know, Marx talked about society being comprised of an economic base and superstructure. The base, of course, being the means by which the society acquires what it needs to to live. You know, and that depends on the mode of production and the development at a particular moment in history, and the superstructure being the ideas, the culture, the political institutions and stuff like that that rest upon this economic base. And you have a certain economic base, you got a certain kind of superstructure. You're not going to see a society based on slavery that a superstructure that extols freedom and liberation of the enslaved. You won't find that. You won't find, the churches won't do that. The culture won't do that. The movies won't do that. They cannot extol the virtues of the people who are enslaved and resisting slavery. And so it's really deep. And the impact on consciousness, on human consciousness mm-hmm. that this relationship has, it's not something that's easily understood, because people get born into this situation, and even people who've written about it previously. I mean, Marx, as much as I respect and appreciated much of what he's had to say, was affected by the reality that he rested all of his existence and his parents and everybody before him rested on this pedestal as well. He did an extraordinarily good job in trying to find a materialist explanation, but his consciousness and reality was also contaminated. I mean, and there are very material, concrete examples of that one could point to. But that's a really powerful thing. And now what we're seeing is that the people who have been the objects of this history, the objects of definitions, the objects of the narrative that's been told by the oppressor, are now beginning to tell our own story in 1,000 different ways. And it's not necessarily something that's poetic. It's sometimes, as Twitter Chase say, about the staccato sound of machine guns and what have you, bombings. I mean, people are fighting their way free from this, and it's affecting the economic base of society. And consequently, the ideas that people had about society and themselves are constantly being challenged. What white people have thought about themselves. The old flag never touches the ground, boy. The old flag never touched America, never losing a war and stuff like that. Nobody talks about that silliness anymore. And in fact, what we see in America and Europe, that's frightened, mm-hmm. which is extraordinary. Now, people who weren't born 30 years ago may not recognize what I'm talking about, because fear is not something that's common to the white world. In fact, the white world have had to invent things to become frightened by, because fear is a normal emotion. So, you know, you have bungee jumping and stuff like that because they don't know how to be scared. But now we see a world where white people are frightened. Yes. Every idea that they had is being challenged about how things are supposed to go. And what is becoming clearer and clearer is white people are losing control. Mm-hmm. And so you have a nation that has been defined in part, that has been constructed off of a parasitic attachment to oppressed peoples around the world, who have defined themselves in relationship to that oppressed people in the world. And now the oppressed people are changing that relationship, and it impacts on what people think of themselves, both the oppressor and the oppressed. Mm-hmm. And that is powerful, and it's much more serious than I think that many people, you know, are able to understand at this moment.
Uhuru Penny, may I just say something as far as the that was profound, Chairman. Thank you so much. And before I want to mention, if you would like to participate in this conversation, please don't hesitate to call 727-565-1599 or contact us via email at dj@uhururadio.com. And this is Jamie Simpson, your host, co-host here with Penny Hess on Reparations in Action, Uhuru News Network. I wanted to say, Chairman, this theory of African internationalism, which takes the former objects of mm-hmm. history, which is almost as, you know, it's a statement that it doesn't really define the gruesome nature of what it is to be an object of history. Yeah. But that understanding, theoretically, I think in your recent book, The Uneasy Equilibrium, you equate, and this is very accurate, mm-hmm. to my thinking, it's more powerful than the heliocentric model of the universe put forward by Galileo and the challenge that put forward to the power structure at that time. But that was just a discussion mm-hmm. between white people who hadn't yet dominated the world about how they saw the universe. This is much more significant in terms of material reality. I really appreciate that.
And what white people did understand from the universe, they had stolen from Africans,
exactly.
Arabs, and other people, Chinese, and people around the world.
Exactly. They were, they were latecomers, right?
Exactly. But I also really think that was a brilliant discussion that you've just been, you know, talking about, Chairman, and this whole question of the superstructure, which mm-hmm. I think is really just a great depiction of white society, mm-hmm. of white people. We are the superstructure in so many ways. I mean, we're the white city, quote, on this hill that has a fault line under it. And mm-hmm. and I mean, I guess, you know, no matter how strong that city can be sitting on the fault line, it's gonna go, you know, because that's its basis.
Yeah, the thing that also is interesting, I was speaking earlier about how the European or white left communist movement has conceived of imperialism and crisis, from atop this foundation, economic basis of slavery and colonialism. But in the past, when Marx and folk like that talk about the economic basis of society, they were speaking specifically to Europe. And not just, and sometimes they weren't speaking of the Europe as a whole. But primarily Europe. They could not see that all of European society, all of it, all of the European development rested on this base of colonialism and slavery. They were not looking at the economic basis when they were looking at what was happening in Europe. They were not looking at the economic basis of society when they were talking about the point of production in Europe. Because the point of production started someplace much earlier than the factories in Europe. Because it was slavery, and mm-hmm. the rest of that was getting the resources that came to Europe that created a point of production inside Europe. So when they talked about the superstructure, they were talking about as it manifested itself in Europe. What we are saying is that the economic base manifests itself in Europe. We are saying that the economic base of society was slavery and colonialism. Mm-hmm. So that was not being experienced in that way by Europe. Mm-hmm. And we are saying that the ideas and institutions that were created from that constitute a superstructure in a different way than Marx talked about the superstructure. I don't know if I'm clear on that.
Yes, absolutely. That's what's really
most
critical.
People who we talk about racism, they don't get it. Mm-hmm. That the ideas and all of this is a natural product of a superstructure based on slavery and colonialism.
Uhuru, I appreciate that. It's my responsibility to go to these public service announcements.
Yes.
You're listening to Chairman Amalia Shetela, Chairman Penny Hess, here with Darren St. Pierre, engineer at Uhuru Radio on Reparations in Action. We go now to these public service announcements, and we'll be back momentarily. If you want to join us live, please call 727-565-1599 or email us at dj@uhururadio.com. Uhuru.
Information, ideas, reality. That's what the Burning Spear newspaper offers you each month. Okay. Truth about government, society, entertainment, and the world around you. The Burning Spear is the oldest Black Power newspaper in existence, and your one-year subscription is only $25. Get the insight and perspective that the mass media machine cannot and will not deliver. Read dynamic articles on the most pressing issues affecting the lives of African workers in the U.S., Africa, and around the world. Each month, you'll find real political analysis of the crisis of parasitic capitalism, insight into world and local events, and a focus on the realities and struggles in the heart of the hood, expressing the vision and voice of the African working class. Uncompromising truth, unwavering focus. The Burning Spear newspaper. This is Black Power in the 21st century. Subscribe today and don't get fooled again. Order your subscription now. Go to burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. That's burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. Uhuru.
United We Fight. The African Internationalist Conference on African Women is being sponsored by the African People's Socialist Party.
March 21st and 22nd at the Stewart Center, 821 Vernon Street, Northeast in Washington, D.C.
Get involved and register now for issues African women face. Political and social oppression, economic exploitation,
underemployment, social immobility.
End to the political and social oppression, bringing African women into political life.
Register now at www.apspuhuru.org/AI Women's Conference
or call 202-642-4672. That is 202-642-4672.
For the Conference on African Women, Saturday and Sunday, March 21st and 22nd in Washington, D.C., www.apspuhuru.org/AI Women's Conference.
Uhuru, you're listening to Reparations in Action here on the Uhuru News Network. And we're here in the studio live with Chairman Amalia Shatella of the African People's Socialist Party and Chairwoman Penny Hess. And we do have a caller on the line. I think we're going to... And caller, could you identify... Could you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Uhuru, this is Jesse Neville in Gainesville, Florida.
Uhuru, comrade.
Uhuru, Jesse.
Uhuru. Uhuru, I just wanted to call in and express my profound appreciation to the chairman, Amalia Shatella, for being on the show today, and to Chairwoman Penny Hess, and comrades Jamie and Darren. This has been a really excellent show. We're listening here. I'm with comrade Diane Tornay here in the host city of the National Convention that is happening in less than a week, this upcoming Saturday and Sunday. And I just want to say that it's really inspiring to hear about the history of your work in this city, in this area, and in the world in general, Chairman, to keep the Black Liberation Movement alive. And not only that, but to advance the struggle of African people towards their liberation and self-determination. And it's been a really excellent experience being here, getting the word out. A lot of people here in Gainesville are really excited to hear Chairman Amalia Shatella speak here for the first time in many years, and also to hear Chairwoman Penny and our panel on women's liberation through the eyes of African, Arab, and Indigenous women. A lot of people are really excited about that. We got a call last night from somebody in Houston, Texas, who's making their way down to Gainesville for the convention. We have comrades coming from, of course, St. Petersburg, San Diego, California, here throughout Gainesville. People are going to be tuning in online. And I just want to put the word out to anyone who's listening that if you are not yet registered, the registration is still open. You can register at uhurusolidarity.org/convention. And it's $30 for both days at the Paramount Plaza, 2900 Southwest 13th Street. And we are really excited for the National Convention. We hope to see everyone there. So once again, I just want to thank the chairman and the African People's Socialist Party and forward to the National Convention. Uhuru.
Uhuru.
Uhuru, thank you so much for calling in, Jesse. Excellent work out there in Gainesville and nationally. And I think we're going to turn now to the question of why have this national convention a call to white people to stand in solidarity with liberation? What with Black liberation? What is different between that and as people who struggle against racism? And I want to turn it over to my co-host, Chairman Penny Hess. Uhuru.
Uhuru, Chairman. Yeah, I mean, I think that you've talked a lot about the question of racism and the question of colonialism and how these understandings lead in two different directions, completely different directions. And I think that tied to that is this whole understanding that you explain in your book, An Uneasy Equilibrium, about how capitalism was born in disrepute. It was born from every hideous act that a human being could even commit. And of course, I think that part of what is happening in this period when the subjects of history are coming to light is there's so many more books and different kinds of exposition of what this has meant, what white people have done to Africans, to indigenous, to oppressed peoples around the world. And I know over 10 years ago, actually 15 years ago, I wrote the book Overturning the Culture of Violence. There's so much more out there now exposing this terror. And I think that this is part of what you're talking about, the exposure of white terror. While white people who wanted to find it in the question of racism, which it keeps us in the center, just want to continue to control this narrative, are attempting to do that, but being challenged everywhere we look. And I just wanted you to discuss that a little bit, Chairman.
Uhuru, I think that's important. In addition, we've seen things like more discussion about the lynchings and, the horrors that's been imposed by yes. Europe on the rest of us. But also, we're seeing more attempts to defend capitalism. We hear every now and then somebody says, that's not capitalism. Even this long thing that was written by this guy, P. Piketty, what's his name, out of France?
Piketty,
you know, yes. That's, they want to name the capital, mm-hmm. you know, something to that effect.
Yes.
So there are these efforts to defend capitalism that we see more and more of, too, that it's not capitalism, it's called, what do they call it? Some kind of predator capitalism, some kind of, you know, different kind of capitalism.
And some people call it the neoliberalism all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Vulture capitalism.
Yeah. The point is, they want to say it's not capitalism itself,
as
that
it
what
born.
We're getting yeah. here is just not the right capitalism, just
deviation.
Not the good capitalism, yeah. that kind of thing. And but we are talking about a capitalism that owes its existence to slavery, and to say slavery is not to say the issue. I mean, it's a term, a concept that people are kind of familiar with, but what it means and has meant in terms of devastation mm-hmm. of populations and moving and destroying families and human communities around the globe, and colonialism. What it has meant to the destruction of whole peoples throughout the Americas and other places, the wars that's been initiated against people in Asia and the Middle East. I mean, you can't find a good thing about that for me.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about capitalism came from this, and there's no way that you can get away from that. That's why we have to keep talking about it. Capitalism was born parasitic. And we have to keep people remembering this. In my view, part of what's really important is that when we talk about the rise of capitalism coming in this way, in many ways, what we do is obscure the subjective factor. And because that the white folk who want to get upset, you know, because you're always saying something bad about white people. You're always saying something, you're so bitter kind of stuff, you know, that we hear. And it's not about that. I can say it as coldly and as, you know, scientifically as possible. We can come with numbers if we want to, and to show that this reality resulted in this. And this is what we are faced with because of that. I think that's important. We see that patriots want to find something good about capitalism and about the U.S. You know, you got there must be something good. I've spoken to Africans on the continent of Africa who've talked to me about what the good the colonialism did do. Well, they did do this. They brought some hospitals. And this makes the assumption, first of all, that the hospital would be needed if white folks hadn't come there. And secondly, that if it were needed, that Africans don't have the ability to create hospitals. In fact, most of the medicinal and educational that Europe got, they got from Africa and other places like that. So all of that is just phony. So there is nothing that can be said that can really exonerate capitalism. There was no good old capitalism. There was no capitalism that was different during the era of Jefferson that was different. Unlike what we are confronted with now. And I think that's really important. And I think what's interesting to behold as well that is increasingly, even though we talk about capitalism trying to defend itself, we see capitalism, America, that's running into like ideological dead ends, to running into and we see this often in the popular culture. In the popular culture, there's an attempt to recapture the days of imperialist glory and power with superheroes. Go back to the comics, and these superheroes, most of them were created during the time of American imperialist expansion and stuff around the world. You got Superman, the American way, and you've got all of these heroes, some of them lasted, some of them, you know, not even around anymore, but they're being resurrected now. So go back and the thing of the past, that helps you feel good to see that. And then you see, so that's the past, that's the thing they're looking for, bringing the past forward, but they can't go anywhere with the future. So everything is zombies, dead. Mm-hmm. Zombie is dead, the walking dead. vampires, the living dead. You know, this is becoming increasingly a part of the popular culture, and it shows a certain decadence that, you know, has emerged with a social system that cannot see a genuine future.
And that's the reason they can't see a genuine future is because capitalism itself has never been anything good about capitalism. You got people, I understand that something like 22 people commit suicide a day, veterans who participated in murdering people in Iraq and Afghanistan, 22 a day. That more have been killed in this year than were killed in the entire so-called Iraqi-Afghanistan war. So, I mean, all of this represents a decadent situation where people who commit these horrors against around the world can no longer find justification. There's no ideological justification. There's no way that you can justify this. So capitalism was born in disrepute. There never was anything good about it. But people could act like something was good about it because they had created a certain place in the world where most of the people were under such severe domination that our voices could not be heard, certainly in unison, and that's not the case today. Now people have to ask themselves, have to check their self-definition by how they're also being defined by the rest of the world. Uhuru. Yeah.
Uhuru. Thank you for that, Chairman. That was amazing. And it takes a while for these concepts to sink in, especially for us in the white community who haven't expressed, as Malcolm X said, the experience of sitting on the hot stove of oppression, but have the experience of viewing that situation. And I guess for that, and I know that you don't have a lot of time, and I want to remind people they can call in at Uhuru. They can go to dj@uhururadio.com or call 727-565-1599. But I wanted to ask you, Chairman Omalia Shetela, why do you think that white people should come into organization under the African Liberation Movement, such as we're calling on people to do at the National Convention of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, March 7th and 8th in Gainesville?
I think that white people should do that because what we say is true. And it is backed up by scientific evidence. I'm not saying anything that someone could not go to a library and investigate themselves. The problem they've had in the past in seeing this is how to interpret it. But all of the evidence is there that what we say is true. Go to the internet, go to the newspapers, go to your TV shows. What we say is true. That the reason that the world is in such disarray for Europe and white people is because peoples who have been living under domination for so long have struck out, and that we're winning our freedom. And if people really want to participate in human progress, then you have to recognize that the struggles for freedom and liberation represents human progress. And that what we see by drone wars and this patriotism for white power, etc., is an attempt to hold back progress. It's a struggle against the future, and the future is occurring. There's no way you can hold back the future, and people need to get on the right side of history if they're interested in making the future, and need to be conscious of the fact that if they're not interested in making history and making progress, then what they are trying to do is they're standing on the wrong side of history. And I think it's important for us to give people an opportunity to make choices. To have informed choices. That's why I think it's important for us to try to bring science to this discussion. So to the extent possible, it's not something based purely or solely on subjectivism, how we feel about things. But scientifically, this is your future. If you go along this path, this is the future. I do believe those people who say that there's going to be a big, massive earthquake in California that might actually separate California from the rest of the continent. I believe that. And because I believe that, right now I'm in Florida. But the point is that, you know, you can fool yourself and just go down a path that and ignore all the reality. And somebody can say, well, it's not going to happen because God loves us all. And God wouldn't let this happen because we live in America and we are wonderful and good and stuff. And somebody is packing right now or doing something else that recognizes the science that's involved here. And our responsibility is to help people be able to see the future, you know, and white people should be in Gainesville, Florida, should participate in this USM convention, and should join the leadership of the African Revolution and the oppressed peoples around the world and become one with the people and oppose to white power and imperialism and help to destroy it. Uhuru.
Uhuru, Chairman. Thank you for that. I really appreciate that. And I think that the challenge to us, you know, as white people is to recognize that we can separate ourselves from this government, this state, this oppressive state that has the monopoly on violence, this incredible violence that it takes to maintain it towards African people and oppressed people around the world. Our identity is not there. Our identity is in solidarity with the people on the planet Earth, and this relationship under the leadership of the party gives us that internationalism, that ability to, you know, to have a principled relationship, not based on, oh, I want to go in the African community and just think this is so cool, you know. And I just really appreciate this relationship of solidarity that you have created, that the African People's Socialist Party has created for us. And unite, that everybody, all the white people who are listening, or, you know, need to come to Gainesville. Any way you can, you need to get there. I also wanted to say that the chairman would be leading a study today at 4:00 Eastern on dialectical materialism, which is really a profound understanding of the world and the interconnections of all peoples and all phenomenon in the world and on the planet, and talking about that in a political way, and in terms of how we understand, how that allows us to understand the future and the nature of imperialism that the chairman has come to through African internationalism. It's going to be a profound discussion at 4:00 today, live streamed from here in the Uhuru House. So you can just go to uhurunews.com, and there should be a little window there on the right side of the website, and you can click on that and watch and actually participate in this great study today. So we really appreciate the chairman giving us his time and coming here to speak with us today, Uhuru Chairman.
Uhuru, thank you, comrades.
Uhuru, I want to echo that sentiment and express profound appreciation to you, Chairman Amalia Shetela, for the work that you've done for the majority of your life to build the African People's Socialist Party, for building the African People's Solidarity Committee. And I would like to really express profound appreciation to Chairwoman Penny Hess for having answered that call and demonstrated for us a stance in accountable solidarity with the African liberation movement and by extension the oppressed people of the world. This is a path back to humanity that may not have been forged for us had it not been for this organization. So we deeply appreciate that from the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. And I appreciate everyone who's listening and echo the call to go to uhurusolidarity.org/convention and register today for the March 7th and 8th National Convention. It's going to be profound. And we're going to have a panel discussion on the role of white people in the so-called Black Lives Matter movement, which I appreciate Chairman Amalia Shetela having rebranded the Black Power Matters movement recently, because I really, the material overturning of these oppressive conditions are absolutely necessary if we're going to have any transformation in consciousness or an end to the isolation and alienation and living dead kind of state that we live in on this pedestal of oppression. Uhuru. This discussion about dialectical materialism is at 4 p.m. and I really appreciate Chairman Penny Hess you bringing that up. We look forward to that. You go to Uhuru News, the news section on uhurunews.com, and it says watch live broadcast. That's the live streaming section that you can find that discussion at 4 p.m. led by Chairman Amalia Shetela. And if we have time left, Chairman Penny Hess or Chairman Amalia Shetela, would you like to speak to that concept of dialectical materialism?
Well, actually, what I wanted to say was that I also wanted to express my condolences to the chairman because he lost his daughter a couple of weeks ago, and the funeral was yesterday, which we went to, and it was, it's just you know, when you see this reality of colonialism, this shortening of life, the life expectancy is so uncertain. And the conditions, you know, as we were coming back from the funeral home down 18th Avenue, we saw at least five other churches or funeral homes with humongous, huge crowds of people, of Africans, going to other funerals on that day, just the conditions of life. And I just want to express the condolences and also understand, you know, and salute why you have taken your whole life and dedicated to the struggle of independence in your lifetime. And that is something that is really becoming a reality, that you can feel it, you can taste it, you can feel this imperialism dying. And I just feel, I recognize, where would the world be without you, Chairman? Mm. Where would the world be? Where would oppressed people be right now because of this counterinsurgency that the U.S. government has waged, not only against Africans, but against peoples on the planet, whether militarily or economically, as they've done in so many ways. I just want to salute you and say what an honor to work under your leadership and the ability for us as white people to have a future on this planet, Uhuru.
Uhuru, comrade. Thank you very much.
Uhuru. And I think that, as you have often said, Chairman, this future that you speak of is an optimistic future. It is a bright mm-hmm. future.
Indeed.
We still hear echoes of
yes.
dying forces in society, struggling against those forces which are being born, which are asserting themselves daily, and they are forces that are for life. They are forces that are creative forces, not these destructive forces that imperialism has always represented. We had a film showing of Uhuru Solidarity Movement recently, where we screened, and Darren St. Pierre, I want to just put you forward too for being part of this discussion here in the studio and facilitating it technologically as our engineer and a member of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. At that film showing that you were present at, Darren, with myself, we screened the murder of Fred Hampton. And this did bring up the question of fear among some white people. And we didn't have a chance to really lay it out. But it's something that I think that we need to take on in the solidarity movement mm-hmm. as far as conveying how warm and optimistic, while it's difficult work to struggle against imperialism and white power, the great humanity and honesty that comes from doing this type of work and working under the leadership of the African Liberation Movement is unparalleled. I cannot think of another, but a more significant act or step that we can take as white people on a pedestal of oppression of over 600 years than to demand reparations on every level, reparations materially in the form of joining the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, donating to the Sustainer campaign. If you're a member already, I would call on you to up that, become a Che level sustainer. Become a Marcus Garvey level sustainer. There are all types of levels that might fit you to help forward this work, because things like black community control of police are not abstract notions. Things like the Black People's Grand Jury represent African people creating their own institutions and demanding power, not asking for reforms, not asking for crumbs from their own oppression, but demanding that the world be set right side up once again. And with that, I want to thank our listeners. I want to thank Chairwoman Penny Hess, my co-host today, Darren St. Pierre, engineer, and especially Chairman Omalia Shatella of the African People's Socialist Party, founder of the Uhuru Movement. Thank you so much for joining us today. We look forward to your keynote presentation March 7th at the National Convention of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. Uhuru, Chairman Omalia.
Uhuru, come on. Thank you so much.
Uhuru. Thank you, Chairman.
Uhuru. And again, you go to uhurusolidarity.org/conference. And we look forward to you joining us on uhurunews.com on live stream to listen to Chairman Omalia Shatella lay out a study of dialectical materialism and its significance for exactly this type of work. again, thank you to everyone. And if you'd like to join, you can also go to uhurusolidarity.org, become a member today. This is Uhuru Radio, Reparations in Action. I'm Jamie.